I use my good arm to prop myself up and wince. My chest throbs. I think I've cracked a rib. When I try to stand, I realize that I've sprained one of my ankles, too. I can't tell if adrenaline is keeping me from feeling other effects of my fall. Shouts come from around the building's corner. I force myself to think. I'm now near the rear of the building, and several alleys branch off behind me into the darkness. I limp into the shadows. When I look over my shoulder, I see a small group of soldiers rush to where I'd fallen, pointing out the broken glass and blood. One of the soldiers is the young captain I saw earlier, the man named Mateus. He orders his men to spread out. I quicken my pace and try to ignore the pain. I hunch my shoulders so that the black of my outfit and hair help me melt into the darkness. My eyes stay down. I need to find a sewer cover. The edges of my vision are blurring now. I push one hand against my ear and feel for blood. Nothing yet. A good sign. Moments later, I catch sight of a sewer cap on the street. I heave a sigh, readjust the black handkerchief covering my face, and bend down to lift the cover.
Freeze! Stay where you are!
I whirl around to see Mateus, the young captain from the hospital's entrance, facing me. He has a gun pointed straight at my chest, but to my surprise, he doesn't fire it. I tighten my grip on my remaining knife. Something changes in his eyes, and I know he recognizes me, the boy who had pretended to stagger into the hospital. I smile. I have plenty of wounds for the hospital to treat now. Mateus narrows his eyes.
Hands up. You're under arrest for theft, vandalism, and trespassing.
You're not going to take me in alive.
I'd be happy to take you in dead if you prefer.
What happens next is a blur. I see Mateus tense up to fire his gun. I throw my knife at him with all my strength. Before he can fire, my knife hits him hard in the shoulder, and he falls backward with a thud. I don't wait to see him get up. I bend down and heave the manhole cover up, then lower myself down the ladder and into the blackness. I pull the sewer cover back in place. My injuries are catching up to me now. I stumble along in the sewers, my vision going in and out of focus, one of my hands pressed hard against my side. I'm careful not to touch the walls. Every breath hurts. I must have cracked a rib. I'm alert enough to think about which direction I'm moving in and concentrate on heading toward the lake sector. Tess will be there. She'll find me and help me to safety. I think I can hear the rumble of footsteps overhead, the shouts of soldiers. No doubt someone has discovered Mateus by now, and they might even have headed down into the sewers too. They could be hot on my trail with a pack of dogs. I make a point to take several turns and walk in the filthy sewer water. Behind me, I hear splashes and the sounds of echoing voices. I take more turns. The voices get a little closer, then farther. I keep my original direction planted firmly in my mind. It would be something, wouldn't it? To escape the hospital only to die down here, lost in a gaudy maze of sewers? I count off the minutes to keep myself from passing out. 5 minutes. 10 minutes. 30 minutes. An hour. The footsteps behind me sound far away now, as if they are on a different path than I am. Sometimes I hear strange sounds, something like a bubbling test tube and a sigh of steam pipes, a breath of air. It comes and goes. 2 hours. 2.5 hours. When I see the next ladder leading up to the surface, I take my chances and pull myself up. I'm in real danger of fainting now. It takes all my remaining strength to drag myself onto the street. I'm in a dark alley. When I've caught my breath, I blink away my fuzzy vision and study my surroundings. I can see Union Station several blocks away. I'm not far now. Tess will be there waiting for me. 3 more blocks. 2 more blocks. I have 1 more block. I can't hold on any longer. I find a dark spot in the alley and collapse. The last thing I see is the silhouette of a girl off in the distance. Maybe she's walking toward me. I curl up and begin to fade away. Before I black out, I realize that my pendant is no longer looped around my neck.
June. I still remember the day that my brother missed his induction ceremony into the Republic military. A Sunday afternoon, hot and mucky. Brown clouds covered the sky. I was 7 years old, and Mateus was 19. My white shepherd puppy, Ollie, was asleep on our apartment's cool marble floor. I lay feverishly in bed while Mateus sat by my side, his brow furrowed with worry. We could hear the loudspeakers outside playing the Republic's national pledge. When they got to the part mentioning our president, Mateus stood and saluted in the direction of the Capitol. Our illustrious elector primo had just accepted another 4-year presidential term. That would make this his 11th term. "You don't have to sit here with me, you know," I said to him after the pledge finished. "Go to your induction. I'll be sick either way." Mateus ignored me and placed another cool towel on my head. "I'll be inducted either way," he said. He fed me a purple slice of orange. I remember watching him peel that orange for me. He cut one long, efficient line in the fruit's peel, then removed it all in one piece. "But it's Commander Jameson," I blinked through swollen eyes. "She did you a favor by not assigning you to the war front. She'll be upset you're skipping. Won't she mark it on your record? You don't want to be kicked out like some street con." Mateus tapped my nose disapprovingly. "Don't call people that, Junebug. It's rude. And she can't kick me off her patrol for missing the ceremony. Besides," he added with a wink, "I can always hack into their database and wipe my record clean." I grinned. Someday I wanted to be inducted into the military too, draped in the Republic's dark robes. Maybe I'd even be lucky enough to get assigned to a renowned commander like Mateus did. I opened my mouth so he could feed me another piece of orange. "You should skip going to Batala more often. Maybe you'd have time to get a girlfriend." Mateus laughed. "I don't need girlfriends. I've got a baby sister to take care of." "Come on, you're going to get a girlfriend someday." "We'll see. Guess I'm picky like that." I stopped to look my brother directly in the eyes. "Mateus, did our mother take care of me when I was sick? Did she do things like this?" Mateus reached over to push sweaty strands of my hair away from my face. "Don't be stupid, Junebug. Of course Mom took care of you, and she was much better at it than I am." "No, you take care of me the best," I murmured. My eyelids were growing heavy. My brother smiled. "Nice of you to say so." "You're not going to leave me too, are you? You'll stay with me longer than Mom and Dad did." Mateus kissed me on my forehead. "Forever and ever, kid, until you're sick and tired of seeing me." 12:01 a.m., Ruby Sector, 72 degrees Fahrenheit, indoors. I know something has gone wrong the instant Thomas shows up at our door. The lights in all residential buildings have gone off, just as Mateus had said they would, and nothing but oil lamps light the apartment. Ollie is barking up a storm. I'm dressed in my training uniform and a black and red vest with my boots laced and my hair tied back in a tight ponytail. For a brief moment, I'm actually glad that Mateus isn't the one waiting at the door. He'd see my getup and know that I'm headed out to the track, defying him again. When I open the door, Thomas coughs nervously at the surprised look on my face and pretends to smile. There's a streak of black grease on his forehead, probably from his own index finger, which means he just finished polishing his rifle earlier in the evening and his patrol's inspections tomorrow. I cross my arm. He touches the edge of his cap politely. "Hello, Mr. Paris," he says. I take a deep breath. "I'm headed out to the track. Where's Mateus?" "Commander Jameson has requested that you come with me to the hospital as soon as possible." Thomas hesitates for a second. "It's more of an order than a request." There's a hollow feeling in the pit of my stomach. "Why didn't she just call me?" I ask. "She prefers for me to escort you." "Why?" My voice starts to rise. "Where's my brother?" Now Thomas takes a deep breath. I already know what he's going to say. "I'm sorry. Mateus has been killed." That's when the world around me goes silent. As if from a great distance, I can see that Thomas is still speaking, gesturing with his hands, pulling me to him for a hug. I hug him back without realizing what I'm doing, I feel nothing. I nod when he steadies me and asks me to do something, to follow him. He keeps an arm around my shoulders. A dog's wet nose nudges my hand. Ollie follows me out of the apartment, and I tell him to stay close. I lock the door and stuff the key into my pocket and let Thomas guide us through the darkness to the stairs. He's talking the whole time, but I can't hear him. I stare straight ahead at the reflective metal decorations lining the stairwell, at the distorted reflections of Ollie and me. I can't make out my expression. I'm not sure I even have one. Matthias should have taken me with him. This is my first coherent thought as we reach the bottom floor of our high-rise and climb into a waiting Jeep. Ollie jumps into the back seat and sticks his head out the window. The car smells damp, like rubber and metal and fresh sweat. A group of people must have ridden in here recently. Thomas sits in the driver's seat and makes sure my seatbelt is buckled. Such a small, stupid thing. Matthias should have taken me with him. I run this thought over and over again in my head. Thomas doesn't say anything else. He lets me stare out at the darkened city as we go, occasionally shooting me a hesitant glance. Some small part of me makes a mental note to apologize to him later. My eyes glaze over at the familiar buildings we pass. People, mostly workers hired from the slums, pack the first floor stands even with the lights out, hunched over bowls of cheap food on the ground-level cafes. Clouds of steam float high in the distance. Jumbotrons, always on regardless of power shortages, display the latest warnings about floods and quarantines. A few are about the Patriots, this time for another bombing up in Sacramento that killed a half a dozen soldiers. A few cadets, 11-year-olds with yellow stripes on their sleeves, linger on the steps outside an academy. The old and worn Walt Disney Concert Hall, letters almost completely faded. Several other military jeeps cross our intersection, and I see the blank faces of their soldiers. Some of them have black goggles on, so I can't see their eyes at all. The sky looks more overcast than usual, signs of a rainstorm. I pull my hood over my head in case I forget when we finally get out of the car. When I turn my attention back to the window, I see the part of downtown that sits inside Batala. All the lights in this military sector are on. The hospital's tower looms just a few blocks away. Thomas notices me craning my neck for a better view. "Almost there," he says. As we draw near, I can see the crisscross lines of yellow tape surrounding the bottom of the tower, the clusters of city patrol soldiers, red stripes on their sleeves, like Matthias, as well as some photographers and street police, the black vans and medic trucks. Ollie lets out a whine. "I'm guessing they didn't catch the person," I say to Thomas.
"How do you know?"
I nod toward the building. "That's really something," I continue. "Whomever it was survived a 2.5-story jump and still had enough strength to escape." Thomas looks towards the tower and tries to see what I see. The broken third-floor stairwell window, the taped-off section right below it, the soldiers searching alleyways, the lack of ambulances.
"We haven't caught the guy," he admits after a moment. The rifle grease on his forehead gives him a bewildered look. "But that doesn't mean we won't find his body later."
"You won't find it if you haven't found it yet." Thomas opens his mouth to say something, then decides against it and goes back to concentrating on the road. When the Jeep finally rolls to a stop, Commander Jameson breaks away from the group of guards she's standing with and marches over to my car door.
"I'm sorry," Thomas says abruptly to me.
I feel a brief pang of guilt for my coldness and decide to not back at him. His father had been a janitor for our apartment high-rise before he died, his late mother a cook at my grade school. Matthias had been the one to recommend Thomas, who had a high trial score, to be assigned to the prestigious city patrols, despite his humble background, so he must feel just as numb as I do. Commander Jameson walks up to my car door and raps twice on the window to get my attention. Her thin lips are painted an angry stroke of red, and in the night her auburn hair looks dark brown, almost black.
"Move it, Paris! Time is of the essence!"
Her eyes flicker to Ollie in the back seat.
"That's not a police dog, kid!"
Even now, her demeanor is unflinching. I step out of the jeep and give her a quick salute. Ollie jumps down next to me. "You called for me, Commander," I say. Commander Jameson doesn't bother to return my gesture. She starts walking away, and I'm forced to hurry along beside her, struggling to fall into step. "Your brother Mateus is dead," she says. Her tone doesn't change. "I'm of the understanding that you are almost done with your training as an agent, correct? That you've already finished your courses on tracking?" I fight hard to breathe. A second confirmation of Mateus's death. "Yes, Commander," I manage to say. We head into the hospital. Waiting room is empty. They've cleared out all the patients. Guards are clustered near the stairwell entrance. That's probably where the crime scene starts. Commander Jameson keeps her eyes forward and her hands behind her back. "What was your trial score?" 1,500, Commander. Everyone in the military knows my score, but Commander Jameson likes to pretend not to know or care. She doesn't stop walking. "Ah, that's right," she says, as if it's the first time she's heard it. "Maybe you'll be of use after all. I've called ahead to Drake and told them that you are dismissed from further training. You were almost done with your coursework anyway." I frown. "Commander?" "I received a full history of your grades there. Perfect scores. You've already finished most of your courses in half the number of years, yes? They also say you're quite a troublemaker. Is this true?" I can't understand what she wants from me. "Sometimes, Commander. Am I in trouble? Did they expel me?" Commander Jameson smiles. "Hardly. They've graduated you early. Follow me. There's something I want you to see." I want to ask about Mateus, about what happened here, but her icy demeanor stops me. We walk down a first-floor hall until we reach an emergency exit door at the very end of it. There, Commander Jameson waves away the soldiers guarding it and ushers me through. A low growl rumbles in Ollie's throat. We step out into the open air, this time at the back of the building. I realize that we are now inside the yellow tape. Dozens of soldiers stand in clusters around us. "Hurry up," Commander Jameson snaps at me. I quicken my pace. A moment later, I realize what she wants to show me and where we are walking. Not far ahead is an object covered in a white sheet. 6 feet long, human. Feet and limbs look intact under the cloth. Definitely didn't fall naturally like that, so someone had to lay him out. I start to tremble. When I look down at Ollie, I see that the fur on his back is standing up. I call to him several times, but he refuses to walk any closer, so I'm forced to follow Commander Jameson and leave him behind. Mateus kissed me on my forehead. "Forever and ever, kid, until you're sick and tired of seeing me." Commander Jameson halts in front of the white sheet, then bends down and throws it aside. I stare down at the dead body of a soldier clad in military black, a knife still protruding from his chest. Dark blood stains his shirt, his shoulder, his hands, and the grooves of the knife hilt. His eyes are closed now. I kneel before him and smooth strands of his dark hair away from his face. It's odd. I don't take in any details of the scene. I still feel nothing but that deep numbness. "Tell me about what might have happened here, cadet," Commander Jameson demands. "Consider this a pop quiz. This soldier's identity should motivate you to get it right." I don't even inch from the sting of her words. The details rush in, and I start talking. "Whoever hit him with this knife either stabbed him from close range or has an incredibly strong throwing arm, right-handed." I run my fingers along the blood-caked handle. "Impressive aim. The knife is one of a pair, correct? See this pattern painted on the bottom of the blade? It cuts off abruptly." Commander Jameson nods. "The second knife is stuck in the wall of the stairwell." I look towards the dark alley that my brother's feet point to and notice the sewer cover several yards away. "That's where he made his getaway," I say. I estimate the direction the sewer cap is turned in. "He's also left-handed. Interesting. He's ambidextrous." "Please continue." "From here, the sewers will take him deeper into the city, or west to the ocean. He'll choose the city. He's probably too wounded to do otherwise, but it's impossible to track him accurately now. If he has any sense, he'll have taken half a dozen turns down there and done it in the sewer water, too. He wouldn't have touched the walls. He'll give us nothing to track. I'm going to leave you here for a bit, so you can collect your thoughts. Meet me in 2 minutes in the third floor stairwell so you can give the photographer some room. She glances once at Mateus's body before she turns away. For a brief second, her face softens. What a waste of a good soldier. Then she shakes her head and leaves. I watch her go. The others around me stay a good distance away, apparently eager to avoid an awkward conversation. I look down at my brother's face again. To my surprise, he appears peaceful. His skin looks tan, not pale like I'd assumed it would. I half expect his eyes to flutter, his mouth to smile. Bits of dried blood flake off into my hands. When I try to brush them off, they stick to my skin. I don't know if this is what sets off my anger. My hands start shaking so hard that I press them against Mateus's clothes in an attempt to steady them. I'm supposed to be analyzing the crime scene, but I can't concentrate. You should have taken me with you, I whisper to him. Then I lean my head against his and begin to cry. In my mind, I make a silent promise to my brother's killer. I will hunt you down. I will scour the streets of Los Angeles for you. Search every street in the Republic if I have to. I will trick you and deceive you, lie, cheat, and steal to find you, tempt you out of your hiding place, and chase you until you have nowhere else to run. I make you this promise. Your life is mine. Too soon, soldiers come to take Mateus to the morgue. 3:17 a.m. My apartment, same night. The rain has started. I lie on the couch with my arm draped over Ollie. The spot where Mateus usually sits is empty. Stacks of old photo albums and Mateus's journals clutter up the coffee table. He'd always loved our parents' old-fashioned ways and kept handwritten journals just like how they'd kept all those paper photos. You can't trace them or tag them online, he always said. Ironic coming from an expert hacker. Was it just this afternoon that he'd picked me up from Drake? He'd wanted to talk to me about something important right before he left, but now I'll never know what he had to say. Papers and reports cover my stomach. One of my hands clutches a pendant necklace, a piece of evidence I've been studying for a while now. I squint at its smooth surface, its lack of patterns. Then I drop my hand with a sigh. My head hurts. I learned earlier why Commander Jameson pulled me out of Drake. She's had her eye on me for a long time. Now she suddenly has one less in Mateus's patrol, and she's looking to add an agent. A perfect time to nab me before other recruiters do. Starting tomorrow, Thomas is taking over Mateus's position for the time being, and I'm entering the patrol as a detective agent in training. My first tracking mission? Day. We've tried a variety of tactics to catch Day in the past, but none of them have worked, Jameson told me just before she sent me home. So, here's what we'll do. I'll continue.